Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Confidence starts with loving who you are. And when your skin feels nourished and glows on the outside, you naturally radiate confidence from the inside. Give your skin a glow-up with Osea's clinically proven Mega Moisture Duo. This ultra-hydrating body care features two of Osea's best sellers, Undaria Algae Body Oil and Undaria Collagen Body Lotion. These seaweed-powered heroes use skincare-level ingredients normally reserved for your face for results you can see and confidence you can feel. Osea has been making clean, clinically proven seaweed-infused face and body care products for over 28 years. This luxurious skincare is vegan, cruelty-free, and climate-neutral certified, so you never have to choose between your values and your best skin. Glow from the inside out. Get 10% off your first order with code GLOW at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code GLOW.
Hello, welcome to the Autocar Podcast, My Week in Cars, with Pryor here, Steve Cropley over there. Hello, Steve.
Hello, mate. How's it going?
Very well, thank you, mate. Steve, we've got a letter from Peter Hughes, who has raised an issue which is in the news a bit at the moment. The RAC is calling on the government to commission an independent study into the issue of headlight glare after new research found 85% of those affected believe the problem is getting worse. See, the RAC has surveyed 2,000 drivers and it's found that 89% think at least some headlights on cars on the road today are too bright, of which 3 in 10, higher proportion than ever, think most of them are. 91% of people say they get dazzled when driving, with 3/4 of those saying this happens regularly. It's a problem, isn't it?
Oh, it's a problem, yeah. Especially for the older person. Mm. Although I'm amused by the fact that I've suddenly got much better at night driving because I had a cataract operation a little while ago.
And oh, really?
Restores your eyesight to that of a 30-year-old.
X-ray vision.
So I suddenly restored. I'm fine. But before, it wasn't good. Mm. And there are plenty of people like I was and sort of on the way to that situation. So I think it's a really serious problem.
Yes. Yeah, I do as well. And I think it's proliferation of LED headlights. Some of these automatic headlights that are not supposed to glare the oncoming driver can still appear very bright, can't they?
Yeah.
You don't get the glare in your face, but you're aware in the sort of surrounding area, I think.
I've been wondering. It's a thing I was going to get one of my sons to help me with, just sort of try it on a weekend, get hold of two cars and, you know, one of the ones with shifting headlights.
Oh, that's
just
good.
Just sort of see what it felt like to be on the other end, because I've got no idea.
No, I've been in this Ford Ranger Raptor quite a lot of the minute, and people don't flash to say that they're being glared. You can tell it sort of creates a little gap as you're driving along the auto headlights for a car coming the other way, but I'm interested to see how bright the rest of it looks, even if I'm not dazzled by the actual.
Yeah, I think we should give it a go.
Yeah, we should do more on this, I think, ourselves as well.
I'll tell you what was interesting. When I was driving around in that Capri, you know the 1977 or whatever it was, Capri that I had for a while, even though that didn't have LED lights, I don't think it even had quartz iodine lights, but the headlights were quite good.
Yeah.
I couldn't figure out why. It was one of the ones with Capris with the square lights.
And
They were old school lights, but somehow they were pretty good.
Oh, that's interesting.
Very interesting, isn't it?
I also wonder whether so many have what they would consider self-leveling headlights these days, but that little switch that can, if you have a heavily loaded car, that you can drop the headlight angle down a bit is not so prevalent on cars as it used to be, I don't think.
No.
It's quite often it's hard to find something like, and I like that if I think to myself, this car's got pretty bright lights and you could just flick a switch and down they go, knock them down a bit. I wonder if that, you know, could
make. I often wonder if there are people with who've got that kind of setup who just routinely turn them right up, and that's probably another reason for the dazzle. But I think it's a problem, and you know, did you say REC?
It's the REC, yeah. And fair play to them.
I think their ideas are good.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah, and fair play to them for doing it. One more thing on the headlight front. It's getting harder and harder because cars do not have conventional headlight switches. You know, when somebody stops and waits for you at a junction or a roundabout or a traffic calming measure or whatever, and you want to thank them at night. I quite like to just dip down to the side lights for a second rather than put it on full beam which sort of temporarily blinds them. Yeah, I think it's much more polite to just knock it down to side lights to say thanks very much. That's getting harder to do that. That annoys me.
Yeah, yeah. It's because sometimes it's a touch switch, isn't it? And you get into trouble because you touch it wrongly.
You touch and you can't do it, or it won't go off at all. There is a
delay or something.
Yeah, a delay. But I was in a BMW the other week, and I was waiting at a station at night, and I thought I'll just dip these headlights down to side lights while I'm parked here. Wouldn't let me do it.
Yeah.
Oh no, you can't do that. The engine, the car's engaged. It's doing its thing. You can't.
It's a part of life, isn't it? That sort of we know better than you.
I'm just getting so sick of it, mate.
Be just nice to feel like you were in control of everything, wouldn't
it? I'm getting so tired of a machine telling me it knows better than I do. I was driving a Kia EV9 this morning to the office. I don't want to pick on the Kia EV9 in particular because it has to comply with GSR2 EU regulations which are coming in. So it automatically decides that it's going to tell me every time a speed limit changes. By bing!
Oh, God.
I can see that. I've got eyes.
Oh.
Just... And it does it. Defaults to on starter.
Oh, it drives you mad.
Drives me up the wall, mate.
What's to be done?
I don't know, mate. It's turning me into a raving conspiracy theorist that actually the EU is some kind of, is some kind of malign thing that doesn't want people driving cars. So it's going to make them so infuriating that you're just going to go, take the bus.
I'll walk.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, you and I are going to talk our respective columns over the next half hour or thereabouts.
Yep.
Yours starts, well, Steve, I mean, we bang on about how much we like cheap cars.
Yep.
And then a Bentley arrives.
That's what I think. There's a bloke that at Bentley who is a great car enthusiast, who we all know, called Wayne Bruce, and it amuses him to wait until we've got a real, breeze up about all these practical and cheap cars. And he sends us one of his and shows us what a real car's like. And this happened to me just a few days ago. I was driving around in a Continental GT, not just a Continental GT, but a beautifully specified, very good-looking V8 Continental GT. Mm-hmm. Sounded beautiful. And, of course, it just did everything. It did everything. You suddenly notice that you're not compensating for anything. You're not driving around any potholes. It just does everything. But the thing that I love is the way it, whatever it does, you get the feeling that these kind of people who polish cars to the nth degree, polish cars dynamics to the nth degree, have been there before you. And the thing I like best is two or three places where I live where there are quite a tight bend, can be taken quickly, quickish, but it's got these ruts on the outside. So normal car, into the corner, body rolls, uses up some of the outside wheel suspension travel, so it's quite poor over the ruts.
Mm.
Bentley just did it. It just did it if it was... And it's to do with their air suspension, I think, and the extreme adjustability. But the fact of the matter is, if you pay, you get a better performance.
I like the phrase, they've been there before you.
Yeah.
No, I like that. You drive it. Because so often we drive a car these days and you think, these people have never tested a car in the UK. They've never brought a car to a road like this.
Yeah.
And when you do,
that's such a pleasant surprise. We were talking about a couple, weren't we?
Yeah. And that we tried a BMW M2 last year, which is a nice car. I like the M2 very much. But it's right-hand drive, and it had these optional seats. Have you tried these optional BMW M Sport seats? They've got what I called in copy a carbon fiber penis tray.
You know,
racing seats sometimes have got this kind of thing between your legs to keep your legs, thighs secure in a crash.
Indeed.
Well, they've sort of fitted that to a road car because it looks cool. But so it's got this little carbon fiber patch in between the two where your legs normally sit. But if you try and use the clutch in a manual right-hand drive BMW M2, you have to put your thigh right over the top of it.
All right.
And it's like nobody from BMW has clearly ever tried a right-hand drive car How with a manual gearbox with that seat.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they just wouldn't let you spec it as an option. They'd just go, no, this doesn't work.
Oh,
it just made it genuinely uncomfortable.
I wonder if there's been any reaction to that, because that's a major fault, isn't it?
Yeah.
Normally, they I think they kind of hate to be caught out that way.
I think so, wouldn't you? But there must be, I don't know, maybe there's just so many options and so many
variations
that in the end
we have no idea. I think
nothing ever gets tried. Yeah, you can't try every version of everything, I suppose.
But it still seems like a major problem.
Yeah. Really, yes. It just like, I mean, I don't like those seats very much in a road car anyway, but particularly in a manual in right-hand drive, just doesn't work. But anyway, Bentley wouldn't offer you carbon fibre in the middle of the seat, I don't think, would they?
No.
I don't think that would be a thing. Tell me about, though, on the subject of affordable cars, tell me about the Dacia Duster. We have an update.
It's I apologise for this. I just love the car, and it's just been off for the second service in my ownership, which is at 24,000 miles. Cost me £299 they combine the A and B service and everything gets done and so on. I went down there with my laptop, used their Wi-Fi, waited for a couple of hours, and out came the bloke and said, look, you've obviously hit a pothole. There's the tracking of one of your wheels isn't too good, and the top mount of the suspension is a bit grumbly. We're not saying it needs to be replaced, but some owners would want to replace it. And of course, I'm suggestible, so I wanted to do it.
Yeah.
And while I was cogitating, the extremely nice bloke called Jack in the service department rang up Renault and said, "Can we make a warranty claim on this?" I would have thought that it was my own fault. I was the bloke that drove down the pothole.
Mm.
But they're going to repair it under a warranty claim, and this is an economy car. It's not. Yeah. It's a car where you don't expect kid glove treatment, but I've had some.
Yeah.
And they didn't know, quotes, who I was at all.
Other thing, isn't it? Yeah, there's just, yes, it wasn't. I've had a Mr. Cropley in. It didn't set off any alarms at Renault HQ. It's just
I don't think he even named me. I think he just said, here's a bloke with this problem. What do you think?
And the margins on those cars are really tight, aren't they? Dacias.
Yeah.
So that's really, I'm impressed by that, mate. You're very impressed.
It's such a good car, honestly.
Mm. Yeah.
I'm going to stop now.
Not at all. I'm all for it. Tell me about Mike Hawes from the SMMT, who you spent a bit of time with.
Mike Hawes is, in effect, the spokesman for the SMMT. Vast organisation, represents, I think hundreds of members, all of whom make cars or sell cars.
It's a society of motor manufacturers and traders, isn't
That's
it?
Them,
so it's a big organisation. It's basically the motor industry throughout the UK in all its forms.
That's it. Yeah. And they have a year opener, which is a nice lunch in a London restaurant, and he just stood up and did his usual report and then took our questions. And there are some high-toned people there, Bloomberg, FT, Times, Telegraph, all these sort of people who they're not a pushover like me. and he just strolled through these questions in a really brilliantly well-informed way, and everybody left in a good humour. It was there was good news going on, but it takes a lot, I think, for a single individual to represent satisfactorily so many people, and I just think he needs a real pat on the back, that man. He's great.
Yeah, agreed. How is you? I don't know if you're... Are you writing a story about this? Maybe you already have and I've missed it, but what is the state of play of things in
the
UK industry?
I think the thing is we had a... There was a bit of an increase in car sales. EVs have not done particularly well, and the SMMT is calling urgently for a cut in VAT on private sales of EVs, because only 10%, about 16% of people at the of car sales are EVs at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Needs to be 22 in this year because of the government legislation.
Yeah.
Only about 10% of private buyers buy EVs, and that's really not enough. And so to get them up, incentive is needed. And so he was doing some pretty strident lobbying for this incentive, which is another thing he does well. And they're also saying that car sales next year will be about the same, a little bit better, but there's quite a lot of variables next year. So
it's not
wonderful, but it's better.
What's that coming in at? Is that under 2 million cars a year sold?
I think it's 1.9,
isn't it? 1.9, yeah. Of which 22% are EV, and because of the incentives on, not incentives, the disincentive to have an internally combusted company car, company cars are EVs because you pay vastly less benefit in kind tax, don't you?
Yeah, it's a no-brainer, isn't it?
Yeah. How do you feel about incentivizing private buyers into EVs? Somebody's got to pay for it, haven't they? That's the counter argument. Somebody goes, hang on a minute. If these are all people who are buying expensive things and we're giving them a tax break, is that fair?
Well, Mike Hawes's argument is that the government is having a good time at the moment because people pay, instead of paying 20 grand for a family hatchback, they pay 30 grand for a family hatchback.
Yeah,
the government is getting 50% more VAT on that purchase. Why not share it out? And I think that is a very fair argument.
That's quite a persuasive argument to make, isn't
well,
it?
Well, it was made persuasively to me, put it that way.
Before we go to a break, tell me about the Mark 8.5, as we know it, Volkswagen Golf, which will come with no manual transmission, I believe.
Yeah, I'm just used to Golfs with manual gearboxes, aren't you? And it just seems a bit of a shock, I suppose, but... I can take it on the chin. I mean, I know you've only got to drive one of these sort of 8 or 10 speed autos that, you know, that are very beautifully set up to know that this transmission can deploy the resources of the engine better than us. So if we are in this era of low CO2 and, you know, fuel saving and all the rest of it, then probably makes sense, but I still like changing gears, and I'm gonna the Duster, to name a name, has a really nice manual gearbox.
Yeah,
as does a car like the Mazda MX-5. I do wonder what is ahead for a car like that.
Yeah, we might touch on that a bit in part two because I want to talk about the Toyota GR Yaris and its future as well. But yeah, I guess with mainstream cars, the thinking is, well, it's impossible to drive them on the WLTP fuel consumption cycle well enough that their CO2 will come in, their emissions and CO2 will come in at the point they need to, I suppose. And a modern auto will just do all of that. And I guess if you have a certain amount of electrical assistance, you have to have an auto, don't you? I guess.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I think that it gets complicated otherwise.
Yeah. Right, well, we'll take a very short break, and Steve and I will be back with more My Week in Cars in just a moment.
What car would you buy if you could buy any car? What car would you buy if you knew you could save thousands? What car would you buy if you could compare the latest offers from approved dealers? What car would you buy if you could do all of this in one place in just a few simple clicks? And where would you go to buy that car? What car? Car buying made easy. Visit whatcar.com to buy your next new car.
Hello, welcome back to My Week in Cars. Lee Ryan has written, Steve, who says, I want to ask why no other brand has designed an SUV with a low dashboard that is uniquely Land Rover / Range Rover in particular. I've had a couple of late Range Rover Sports, and when I was shopping around to replace the last one, says Lee, the latest version was not quite released, and also the cost had gone up a bit much. So I tried every available SUV from some of the rivals, Porsche, BMW, Mercedes, but none combined that luxury feel when you climb aboard with such a commanding view of the road.
Oh, interesting.
It's interesting, that, isn't it? And I think he's right.
Yeah, I think he's right. Yeah.
Why do we think that is?
I don't know. I suspect I live in, when I'm in London, I live in a place with an underground car park, which is, and you get pretty close to the roof at times. And the cars that I get closest to the roof in are Land Rovers. So I'm thinking that it may be that they simply steal a bit more vehicle height in relation to the dashboard to give you that view over the dashboard.
Interesting. Yeah.
And the other thing, of course, is that it is a it's something that goes back to the Range Rover, doesn't it? When the you know the hip your hips were level with the bottom of the doors, and there were these beautiful panoramic view of the bonnet. So
yeah,
they sort of it's a model characteristic, I think.
I think so, and I also wonder if other manufacturers, because they are so keen on pitching themselves as dynamic, sporty brands,
yes.
They like a cocooning interior with a high window line, you know, and a dashboard that wraps around the driver to make you feel like, you know, you're special and
you're actually driving a Porsche
and everything else. Yeah. But the problem is you can't see out of the blooming things very well. And yeah. I do think that's an issue, actually. I do. We tested when did the first Audi Q7 come out? 2007, maybe, something like that. I remember being particularly uncomplimentary about the ability to see out of it and park it in the road test. You know,
yeah.
Overhanging car parking spaces like a beer gut over a belt, I think I said. But it's just harder to see out of, it is harder to see out of them. And I think, Lee, that is, you know, they accept that. High window light, not too much glass area because that doesn't necessarily look sporting. You know, they're like a steeply raked windscreen. It's better aerodynamically, I suppose.
Yeah.
But, I think, mate, it's just, the path they've chosen.
Yeah, one of the nice things about a Land Rover.
Yeah. Yeah, we drove as well as this Kia EV9. I was driving a Defender yesterday, new Defender yesterday, which is a vast car, but actually not as hard to place as it could be. Because
you can see.
Because you can see, yeah. You can see all the way to the end of the bonnet. Big mirrors, you can see the sides, you know, big slabby sides, and you don't, you know, you can put it where you want to put it.
I haven't driven one of those for a while. Is it a Defender? Mm. Is it? Does it... is it, you know, we got really excited, didn't we, when it came out. Does it still do it for you?
This was not the best specification, I don't think, because it's a plug-in hybrid, which is okay, but it's also a long wheelbase one on 22-inch wheels.
Was this a 130?
No, it's a 110. 110. But it's still quite a sophisticated ride, but I think, for me, that car probably works better in a slightly less complicated form.
Yeah.
I haven't driven a basic one, basic as they get for a long time either. But
yeah, the diesels are simple, aren't they? But they look a bit old tech, I must say.
Yeah, they do feel a bit that way. Yeah. Yeah. But still pretty impressive. And I think if you had the perfect specification, then that's still the car of choice. And also they'll do stuff that the other cars around it will not do. I think that's the other issue.
You know,
is that if you pitch it against other expensive luxury, nice looking SUVs, they may well not have terrain response, low ratio gears, 3.5 ton towing limit, all of the stuff that the Defender still do, which is important for, you know, some people.
Mm.
And they sell most of them in countries where their size doesn't matter.
That's a good point.
Should we talk the Toyota GR Yaris for a
minute? Yeah, let's go.
I drove one late last year, and it's been facelifted, which Toyota didn't necessarily expect to be doing. So it introduced the GR Yaris, which is a two-door homologation special bodywork, so that it could get its World Rally Championship car competing. The rules say you have to make 25,000 of them. Toyota wasn't sure it would manage all that, because the GR Yaris is pretty special. It's it's got four-wheel drive powertrain that's complicated.
Special body, isn't it?
Special body, yeah. And so they thought to themselves, well, if we're not going to sell 25,000, 35 grand hot hatchbacks, why don't we just make this body and then put the standard Yaris 1.5-litre hybrid powertrain with front-wheel drive into it, and we'll flog a few of those in Japan called the RS. Maybe that will take us over the line. Well, as it is, they needn't have worried, because they've sold 32,000 GRs, which has allowed them to say, okay, well, we'll facelift it, but also it is going to become part of the range going forward. As long as we can sell it, as long as we're able to sell it, we will keep selling.
Sounds like another generation, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think there will be at least another generation.
Wow.
And I wonder if the next gen, because they can't sell this one in the United States, so the Americans get the GR Corolla instead. But I wonder if next gen they will think to themselves, actually, we could do a proper job.
Yeah.
Sell it all around the world. Make it meet crash regulations everywhere.
Oh, but that sounds...
The other interesting thing is that they showed a graph. They show that on average for hot hatchbacks, about 10% are bought as an additional car to the owner's other cars. Usually, hot hatches are somebody's own car, only car.
Yeah.
They just buy a Ford Fiesta ST. That is their car. That's all they've got. For 90% of owners, that's the case. In the Yaris's case, 50% of owners are buying them as an additional car to their fleet.
Wow.
Which is a surprise to Toyota, a surprise to everyone. So my slight fear is that when this facelifted one comes out, they arrive in June, but they'll announce prices in April. My slight fear is that they'll go, you know what?
Yeah.
We could probably make that 45.
It just does look like such a bargain price.
Well, at the moment it is, yeah. Because it's so complicated, mate. It's so because it's got torque sensing front and rear differentials. It's got a really trick triple engine that's turned up to 276 horsepower.
Wow.
From
1.6? From
1.6, yeah. Wow. So it's, and they've done quite a lot to it because our friend Akio Toyoda, who retired as president and CEO to become chairman last year, didn't he? He sort of stepped back because he said, I'm too much of an enthusiast to keep up with things.
Yeah.
Anyway, so he's done a bit of racing, a bit of rallying. He's broken things. He's melted things. He's apparently very grateful. He says, look, you know, this is what we're here for. I've done a 24-hour race. What I found is that the mesh grill at the front is plastic. And when I'm following somebody and a bit of a marble comes off or some debris comes off of their car, the first impact goes straight through the mesh. The next one goes straight through the radiator.
Oh,
so God. Can you make it metal? And they went, oh, yeah, all right.
Wow.
And it's just that sort of development process has been through the... That's the development really process exciting. It's been through.
So they've not dulled it in any way?
No, not at all.
Does it look great?
Should look the same. It was disguised when I drove it, but it should look pretty much the same other than a bigger aperture for cooling at the front.
Wow.
The bumper is now in three pieces rather than one because when racing or on track days, if you damage a corner, you'd have to replace the whole bumper, which is expensive and takes too long. So they've gone, well, we'll make it out of three bits.
Oh, so it's all done for the right reasons.
All done for absolutely the right reasons.
Wow.
Spring rates have gone up and the front anti-roll bar is stiffer. So I think, you know, that sort of hyper agility the car has on turning.
Yeah.
It may feel a little bit more stable on the way in, but it still feels really agile to me. And it's now got an 8-speed auto option, which is quicker. It's a torque converter, not a twin clutch.
Yeah.
But it's quicker in a straight line, quicker around a circuit, they say. But more importantly, there are some people who just won't buy manual.
Yeah.
And this gives them the option.
Does it quick around the circuit when you're using the paddles or just when you stuff it in D?
It's good when you stuff it in D, but I think it's quicker and better in the paddles.
Yeah, interesting.
The only thing is that in the mode I tried it, it was shifting up at the red line. And at the same time, I tended to pull the lever anyway. So sometimes it was taking a gear. It would do two gears. There may be a mode in which it doesn't change up automatically. But I was, you know,
it sounds like quite a time I had. Learning how to do it.
Oh, yeah, massively. And then they had an old one just for a back-to-back test as well. And you go, well, this is still the old one's still brilliant. So it's just a 5-star car made.
Oh, well done them.
I think. Yeah, I'm really pleased. They say they want to... Well, their chief engineer said, We like smells and noise. We want to keep doing that if we can. We want to keep making sports cars for the next 100 years, if we can. But the thing will be whether, with tightening emissions regulations, how long they'll be able to sell it in the UK, I suppose.
Yeah.
I suppose. But we'll see.
Well, at least they're showing some determination, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that, you know, lots aren't, I think you could say.
I think that is true. The hot hatchback is a sort of dying breed, isn't it?
Toyota, impressive bunch, aren't they? Really? Yeah. Are. I don't want Akio to go too far away.
No, nor do I. No, if he stays around. I mean, the chief engineer said, look, you know, this car would not have happened without him in the first place at all. You know, it just, nobody would have been brave enough.
Yeah.
And he's the sort of bloke who will look the other way when... the ride and handling team say, yeah, we just spent £600,000 on, pencils. You'll go, yeah, yeah, fine, whatever. Of course you did.
Top bloke.
Yeah. Can I talk about the acting inspector of Australian Capital Territory road policing, Mark Richardson?
How did you run into this fella?
Oh, I stumbled across a short video on one of the social channels.
Ah, okay.
And from ABC News in Canberra, Australia's Capital Territory.
And the problem is hooning.
The problem is hooning. The Street Machine Summer Nats events is in town, although apparently that isn't the only problem, says Mark. He says it has come with, I won't do the accent, more on tourism. He says, the real car enthusiasts are not a problem, but if we set up an IQ station at the state border instead of a vehicle testing station, we'd probably halve our problem. They literally come down here to see how big of a pest I can be this week. They were all over Canberra and were just playing whack-a-mole. So the problem is that they come and they do burnouts everywhere, and they just... Well, hooning is, you know the definition of hooning. Because it goes back, you know...
Canberra is rather sort of correct place too, I think, in my memory, and it's a long time ago, but they probably wouldn't like it, you know, full of sort of rather important people, I suppose.
Ah, okay, yeah. Is it a bit like, Switzerland, Strasbourg, somewhere like that?
I mean, it's created to contain the national government and, you know, the federal government and
like misbehaving in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, indeed. And, I mean, there's probably plenty of that. But somehow Canberra, it doesn't seem to be the kind of tyre smoke capital of Australia.
Well, here's the other thing. Is that, I mean, he's I like this Australian honesty, mate. I like Australian CarMax for the way they write, but also the fact that one of their chief coppers will say they just haven't evolved very far. They've just plateaued as a subspecies of the human race, and I don't know what goes through their minds. And
to go on the record with that, not bad, is it?
Yeah, that's pretty good. That's much better than I was done proceeding in a westerly direction, and when I did. Anyway,
do you remember that cover line that was on one of them? When there was a huge V8 test, you know, sort of 600 horsepower V8s, and the big strap line on the top of, on the front of the magazine was "Cop that, OPEC."
The other thing is, right, is that I've been to Australia a couple of times. You don't have to go very far to find places where people are not, do you?
No.
In the UK, right, there's a 1,124 people per square mile. In Australia, there's 9.1.
I was amazed by that figure.
Yeah. I hope I've got it right. I've converted from square kilometres.
Well,
but I think it's about, it seems about right to me. It's about, 10 times, no, 100 times less dense than here. Yeah. And most people live around the edge.
They do.
There's a lot of space. So why, if you want to hoon,
yeah,
I can find a place near me, mate. And I live in, I don't know what you call the top end of the southeast, south of the Midlands, I suppose.
Yeah.
If I really wanted to hoon, and I have a Ford Ranger Raptor at home, which is able to do that, I could find a place where nobody was looking.
Yeah.
Why are people not doing? Why do it in front of? Why do it in front of people who are going to be annoyed?
It is a strange trait, isn't it? I think. You know, I think we can safely say attributable to young men that they just want to show off.
Yeah,
And but I agree with you that you know some of the best times you can have are just doing things on your own. When you wrote that, when I read it, I just thought, I wonder, are you a person that would get on with an BAC mono? Could you imagine just owning it and driving it for your own pleasure?
I wouldn't have a mono, but I like the idea of, I don't, you know.
Single seat cars
or motorcycles. Yeah, I'm very, very happy to do that. Yeah. I mean, I would, it's not the idea of it. It's just the mono in particular is all the money and no luggage space for
That's
me.
It,
but yes, in principle, absolutely.
Yeah, because I'm the same. I always, you know, motorcycle tours, if you get, people sometimes propose that that 15 of you go out, and I always think 14 people are going to come back.
Yeah.
you know, some idiot's going to go off the road, or yeah, we're going to have to take somebody to A&E, and you're far better to, you know, have your own accident.
Yeah, even on jobs that we go on, where I came to meet you, mate, in, I think you were on the launch of a Audi A1, maybe, or a Mini, and you were in Berlin, and we drove across in a Citroen DS and the other car in the test. Maybe we drove across in an A1 and a DS, and you were doing a Mini. I forget. Anyway, I came across with a bloke we know very well called Nick Stafford, yeah, and who's, hello Nick, by the way, he's terrific. And he said, well, we need to get to so and so. He said, I hate driving together, mate. I hate the idea of going in convoy and you're sort of pulling out of lanes, yeah, and pulling, yeah, back in at the same time. He said, why don't we just meet here and then meet there?
Yeah.
And I'll see you there. And we got to those places within 2 or 3 minutes of each other.
Yeah.
And you have a nicer time not worrying about somebody,
yeah,
else.
Yeah, that's a very better, sensible attitude,
yeah,
isn't it?
It's just better. Just go, I'll see you there at 6 o'clock.
Perfect. Yeah, love, yeah, it.
Finally, talk me through... I like this from your column. It is Williams Formula One team has opened up themselves to some work experience.
Yeah, I just noticed I was reading Autosport, to name a rival, that they do a job of the week thing, and they talked about work experience for late, you know, sort of well advanced school kids. Mm. Up to grade 20, whatever that means. I'm afraid I came up in a different system. But anyway, not university students. But what they're doing is selecting a tranche of people for about 5 months in a row to come and do a week in their place, just to see what F1's like from the inside and whether it's the sort of thing they would want to use to steer their career in future.
Oh, interesting.
And I just thought, what a fantastic thing to do that is, because they're not going to benefit from it immediately, if at all. Mm. But it's a very Frank Williams thing to do. I interviewed Frank a few times and met him a few other times, and he was so much more than a sort of race obsessed bloke, which is sometimes how these people are portrayed. I mean, I can remember going, he used to study the FT every morning, and he was, you know, he's well into political discussion and things like that. And I could imagine that would be something that is, if he didn't dream it up, he would be looking down thinking it was a bit of a good thing. Mm. And I really, big pat on the back for them.
Yeah.
You know, if I still had kids in the bracket, I'd be trying to smuggle them in there.
Yeah. Because it's in a place which is as busy as a top end of motorsport team is, yeah, bound to be. I mean, people don't have a lot of, you know, people don't have a lot of time to spare on that sort of thing.
No, so thousands of people work there. They're all flat out.
Yeah.
They're flat out both creating cars but also trying to keep up with the tech that everybody else is employing. And, you know, it's a real competitive environment. So to be able to pause long enough to tell a bunch of people, you know, young people who don't know much, bring them up to speed. I think that's a fantastic thing to do.
Yeah, what a cool place. And what a cool place to do your work experience. Oh. Oh. Yeah.
I'll probably be around there myself if I could qualify.
Yeah, exactly. 18. I might consider a change of career myself. Steve, thanks very much. That brings us to the end of My Week in Cars for this week. You can write to us, autocar@haymarket.com. You can find GR Yaris content over at autocar.co.uk and in the magazine and over on the YouTube, where there is a video review of it. What are your movements next week, Steve? Are you around and about?
Yeah, I think I've got to go to Paris on Monday for... To meet up with Mr. Lego, the bloke came up with the unique hybrid transmission that goes into Renaults, built it at home in Lego, brought it to work and said, we should do this. And it took them 10 years, but they did it.
Excellent. I look forward to hearing about that next week. Steve and I will be back this time next week with My Week in Cars. Cheers, mate. See you soon.
Yeah.
Hmm. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.